David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muradaonmoney.com, and joins us monthly and has for many years. Today's topic is planning across a number of areas of your life. And David, welcome back to The Shilling Show, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right. So planning. Gosh, we could talk about retirement, life planning, vocational planning, and so much more. I want to start off, first of all, because you have a class coming up, and I love it when you do this, and we haven't had a chance to promote it for a while, but tell us a little bit about the class that you will be teaching and how people who are interested could sign up.
Yeah, the class is through the University of Virginia's Oshers Lifelong Learning Institute. It's called OLLI, and you can find OLLI classes at olliuva.org. I recommend OLLI classes. They're intended for 50 and up. Most of the people who take OLLI classes are 65 and up. This is one of the few classes that's actually intended for the 50 to 65-year-olds, and it's called Success and Significance in Retirement. And what I'm going to do is for 3 weeks, I'm going to just go over the things you need to do to prepare for retirement. Finances is the easy part, but it'll be covered with a lot of finances. Significance is the harder part. Mm-hmm. It used to be we retired at 65, we were dead at 72, 7 years of leisure, and that was it. Now you retire at 65, you're still alive at 95, you have 30 years of planning. It's a whole nother career. It's an encore career. It's an encore significance of what are you going to do with your life. And it turns out that people that continue to work on significant things live a lot longer. There's a mortality, especially for men who retire at 62, the mm-hmm. mortality suddenly bumps up and 2% of them start dying at 62 when you retire from a job that you didn't particularly like, and you then start recreating, and you just don't have any movement, and you have no reason to get out of bed, and so 62 is an age when a lot of men who retire end up starting to die. I'm not sure what the cause and effect is there. They're correlated, but people who have a significant career and they continue to work, or they continue to do work that's even not even paid, or they continue to have some significant vocation or avocation, really end up living longer. At any rate, there's still room. We've got about 25 registered in the class. It's our way of trying to give back. It's a lot of the things that we do for clients, but it's more for the person who wants to learn about it and do it themselves. And I will admit, it's a great way to get to know me and to get to know what we do for clients as well. So, you know, every now and then someone will take the class and say, yeah, you really know your stuff and I don't want to do any of this, and they become a client. So, but we're intending to try to do it to give back to the community. At any rate, it's going to start not this Thursday, but next Thursday. And the class is from 11 a.m. to 12:30. It's an hour and a half for three weeks.
Once a week
for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So with 4.5 hours of trying to pull together retirement, it's really sort of the minimum that you need to do for retirement, but we're going to cover a lot of different topics and show people how we do it.
You know, you mentioned this about people working or going back to work after retirement, maybe doing something else that they wanted to do. And I remember when I was a kid, and maybe it was just my perspective as a kid, but I remember there was a lot of people that appeared to be in their 60s or 70s in the workforce. I would encounter them as waitresses in going out to dinner. You'd see them in the retail environment. You'd see them in other walks of life. And it was kind of comforting. I remember as a kid, the service level was excellent. And then for a while, you didn't see that. And I think I'm starting to see more of that today. Maybe it's an economic necessity. Am I imagining that?
No, you're not. Retirement was actually invented in the 1960s to get people to move out of the workforce so that all the returning soldiers, you know, who were in the 1940s could move back in. And then what are we going to do with all these retired people? It was mostly common when people worked on a farm for grandma and grandpa to be out there working alongside their kids and grandkids on the farm. And people never retired. They were always doing something useful and something important.
Mm-hmm.
Retirement was sort of invented, and these leisure communities and the whole idea of just recreating with all of your time was kind of invented. I don't think it's the way we were meant to be. My father's 91. He's still active and going strong. And my father's a financial Rembrandt, but the only thing he ever failed at was retirement. He retired for the first time when I was 16 years old, and he retired about 4 or 5 more times after that. And every time he had another venture that he was going to be doing and working on, and you know, at age 60, he was actually starting Murata Money Management out mm-hmm. in California and becoming a fee-only financial planner and in the early days of NAPFA. And that was 30 years ago. So he's just continued to go stronger and stronger and stronger. And I don't think there's any reason why we should retire. In fact, if you're in a job that you hate and you're thinking about retiring early, financially it is much better just to quit your job and find a job that you want to do than it is to retire, you know, early, because retiring early really cuts short your finances. But all of us deserve to have a job that we really love and love to do.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned this. I was talking to a bunch of kids yesterday over at the Homeschool Co-op about my career path, and maybe the at least a dozen, if not two dozen, different things I've done over the years. And they were very interested as young people to know that, you know, you don't have to be locked into something, that maybe there's something that you're doing and you like it for a while and you want to change it. So just keep your perspective broad and wide open, and it'll be good for you. We're going to come back on the other side of this break. David Murata is talking about planning, particularly retirement planning, and all the things you should be thinking about, not on the day of your retirement, quote unquote, but the things that lead up to it and how you can be prepared for that big change. The Shilling Show will continue in just a moment.
I catch myself wishing you were whispering my name.
Hey, the Shilling Show continues here on a Tuesday edition of the program. Stay with us in hour number two, a special edition of the program dedicated to Albemarle County schools, including trouble at Henley Middle School, where a student was struck by a vehicle on school grounds, and there's an attempted cover-up or at least a shunning of obligation to take care of it. We'll have that exclusive story for you in hour number two. Continuing now with David Murata, Murata Wealth Management Planning, especially for retirement, 977-1070 is the phone number. So let's get into some of the specifics here. And first of all, investments. How would you handle investments, or how do you prepare to handle them differently when you're employed and when you're transitioning into that thing known as retirement?
Yeah, most people, when they when they're employed and they're making more money than they're spending and they're putting money into their retirement plans and their savings plans, don't really think about they don't really worry about their investments because they're adding more to their investments than they're taking out. Mm-hmm. When you retire, if you're not working for any kind of money, then suddenly you have to start withdrawing from your portfolio. The portfolio size is fixed. You're going to be probably spending it down, so the portfolio size is only going to get smaller. And that terrifies people because all of a sudden, that's it.
Going in reverse.
Yeah, that's my pie. That's as big as the pie gets. And so now I'm going to start taking money out of it. And that's terrifying. What we recommend is putting 5 to 7 years of your safe spending rate. First of all, we have a safe spending rate. Safe spending rate is probably one of the most important decisions you can make, is how much can I spend each year. Mm-hmm. I spent a year and a half early in my financial planning career. I spent a year and a half just studying all of the literature and coming up with a safe spending methodology. I think it's genius. I think it fits in with the safest amount. It's exactly what you can spend. On average, you'll have money till 101, which means you'll have an 80% chance of not having to reduce your standard of living. A 50-50 is not a safe spending rate. 80% chance of not having to reduce your standard of living is considered safe in the sort of the Monte Carlo of all the different things the returns can do. But the way we do it is we put 5 to 7 years of your safe spending into bonds. That way, all of your investments can run at least 7 years, and then you won't need it until the 8th year. Turns out 7-year standard deviation in the S&P 500 for just the price movements does not go negative. So the one standard deviation does not go negative. That's why 7 years of safe spending makes sense. And that provides you some comfort knowing that if you put your investments at risk on the stock side, they may bounce around, but you can survive for 7 years without them. That's intended to let you sleep well at night. All the stuff on the stock side is intended so that you eat well in 10 years because you keep up with inflation. And so that's the balance that we've done in terms of spending. However, having said all of that, the difference between retiring today and retiring in 5 years is huge. Often your standard of living is 50% greater if you just work another 5 years. And it's somewhat greater, 40 or 30% greater if you work at a job that pays less. So even if you take a job that pays less, but you keep working, you won't be dragging down your portfolio. Then you have 5 years less you need to spend it. And then you're not withdrawing from your portfolio as much. Even if you don't save a dime toward retirement during those 5 years, you just manage your own expenses. And that's why having a job that you love is so important. In majoring in college, everyone majors in, pre-law and pre-biz and pre-med and engineering. And then they go out in the real world and they end up working a job, that's very different from that, and quite often much more enjoyable. They run a food truck. They run a drum circle. They, you know, there's all these.
They become a radio tacos with a business degree.
Exactly, right. So there's all these amazing things that you can do in life. And I think it's because young people want to do something that's meaningful, but their vision is too narrow of what is meaningful. You know, in my impression, you know, by the very definition of the word, God filled the world with mundane things. Mm. And so everyday things have great significance. You know, I view my job as fighting, you know, one of the world problems, the world problem of poverty. I through financial planning, everyone could be rich. Now, in my work, the problem I'm trying to solve is poverty, not income inequality. Because to do income inequality, what you want to do is pull people down from their riches to make it all equal. But what I'm trying to do is to fight poverty by to make sure that everyone is saving and investing so that they're gradually growing rich. And by the very definition, people who aren't taking my advice are causing the income inequality to be worse because they always have nothing. They're spending everything that they have. So, you know, one of the ways of finding your true calling is to ask yourself a series of questions to figure out what you want to do that has significance in life. We've got a blog post coming out by Megan Russell, and it's got a whole list of questions, for what are you willing to suffer?
Mm.
You put up with a lot of stuff to be on the radio because you love being on the radio, mm-hmm. and it's very fulfilling, and there's a lot of flack and feedback that you get in the community. There's people who really don't like you, and then there's people who love you, and you're willing to have that kind of both love and hate relationship with various people in the community because mm-hmm. you love what you do, and it's an important thing. You shine a light on, you know, local politics in a way that no one else really does, and that's a serving to the community. What did you like to do when you were a kid? Because that often tells you things about yourself that you wouldn't know otherwise. What makes you forget to eat mm-hmm. because you love it so
you're
much?
You're so involved.
Yeah, you're so involved. You're so in the zone that you forget, you know, and it's 2 hours later and you come up and you think, wow, 2 hours have gone by because I really love what I'm doing. And you know, what are you afraid of doing? Sometimes people won't do what they're really called to do because they're afraid of it.
What is the fear when you say afraid of it? In what way?
Oh, I remember
not getting hurt.
No, not getting hurt. I remember the first time I was, you know, the very first radio show I was on with you. I think back of it and I think I'm going to be on the radio. I'm terrified. You know, I had a notebook filled with things, you know, in case I couldn't figure out what it was I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've grown more comfortable with that, you know, being some people are afraid to do public speaking. They're afraid of failure.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of us are perfectionists and we're afraid of failure and we want to make sure that everything goes correctly. And so we would have to, you know, we have to really prep something before we do it. Barbara Sher is one of my favorite authors. And she always says, we learn what we love by trying it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're scared to try it and you have this fear of failure, then you won't try things and you may not try the thing you love. She has another recommendation, and that is for one day, just pretend like you're going to do it. just one day. You can do it for one day.
You can handle
that.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go back to college, for example, mm-hmm. you would start applying to various schools and you would start getting that all of that stuff together. You would start looking at schools and get their applications. You know, so just for one day, imagine that you're going to do it and just try it. And, you know, if you don't like it, you wasted a day, you know what I mean? But you've at least moved off of the inertia of not trying things.
I think we waste a lot of days anyway doing lots of stuff that's meaningless or worthless. And, you know, a lot of us could spend a whole day online or binge watching a television show. So why not try something new? You know, to what you've just said, I recently started teaching myself how to play the drums. And I was fearful for years that I would just be lousy at it. I just never thought I could do it. And I got a drum set and I reading the drum music and it's like, I could actually do this, you know, and it's bringing me great joy. So I think just to your point is that whatever that is for people listening, just try it.
Yeah, just try it. You know, at the end of our lives, when people have regrets at the end of their lives, there's two regrets of things they did. It's usually sexual infidelity and drugs,
because mm-hmm.
Those things will really kind of destroy your life and change the course. Other than that, people normally regret things they didn't do.
Mm.
And so long as you ask yourself the question, what's the worst that can happen if I start learning the drums? I'll be terrible. No one will care.
So what?
Right. I'm going to practice those in my own house, and maybe I'll go and I'll perform somewhere, and maybe I won't get asked back. Right. You know, there's very little downside to that, and there's a lot of upside because you're learning something new, and learning something new is keeping your brain active.
Yes, it's
if
good
nothing
for the
else.
Brain.
Yeah, it's good for the brain.
977-1070 is the phone number. We have a final segment left with David Murata. We're talking about planning for retirement, planning on your life, career, vocation. We'll get to all of that and wrap it up on the other side. 977-1070. Stay with The Shilling Show. Oh, what a wonderful, peaceful song that is every time I hear it. It is 12:47 here on The Shilling Show. Final segment with David Murata, Murata Wealth Management. We're talking about planning for retirement and just general planning because life is part of retirement and retirement's part of life, but neither one is the end-all be-all. You know, healthcare is really a big one, and I think a lot of people are concerned, frightened, intimidated in this Obamacare environment that we live in right now. It's so wrong and so oppressive and so backward. So how do people plan for that?
So, yeah, we had a radio show on earlier about how terrible the rates are in Albemarle County right mm-hmm. now, and really in the state of Virginia, it's one of the worst places in the world to try to get good rates. But I do recommend when we do safe withdrawal rates, we will often set aside a pile of money for a healthcare event. And I do recommend people fund their HSAs to the maximum because that provides that pile of money. And how big a pile of money is a difficult thing because if you can put $100,000 into it, you're fine. Usually the number of events that go over $100,000 in an entire retirement career are very small. On average, the correct number is $35,000, and it usually means 6 months of care and then you die. And that's the average, so that's kind of a good amount to set aside. So $35,000, $50,000, $100,000, $250,000, the odds of each one continually get smaller and smaller and smaller. And for our well-off clients, we will sometimes put aside $250,000 because that's kind of the maximum you'll ever need. Mm-hmm. $100,000 is a good number for planning, and $35,000 is on average. Obviously, people who don't have $100,000 somehow make do. And typically, the first in a married couple, the first takes care of the first to die, mm-hmm. and then the second really sort of needs care. Having long-term care insurance, it's a difficult thing to talk about on the radio because every case is a little bit different. And there's some lawyers who put up billboards who say, if your financial advisor doesn't recommend long-term care insurance, sue them. And that's what the billboard says.
I take it you don't really abide by that.
No, we don't really care for long-term care insurance, mostly because the amount of money that you pay into long-term care insurance is astronomical. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's eaten up by the insurance company itself. And then it doesn't insure. It insures up to a maximum, and that's not what you want. You want to be able to handle the 10-year Alzheimer's case, and that's the hard one to handle. Mm-hmm. And they just won't do that because there's a maximum payout. What I found is instead of long-term care insurance, funding your HSA to the maximum all your life will give you a long-term care pile of money, and that will handle more than long-term care. It will handle a lot of other things as well. So we're not fans of most insurance products because the fees on them and commissions and sales and all that really end up being higher than you need to be. The one insurance product we like is umbrella insurance because it's really cheap. Mm-hmm. And it covers a lot of disasters that might otherwise swamp your portfolio.
HSAs have been problematic in recent years. You mentioned the high rates in Charlottesville. And I think they still have high deductible health plans, but that's because all the health plans are high deductible. So is it even possible to get an HSA at a reasonable cost these days for people living in Charlottesville, Albemarle?
Yeah, and again, to be precise, an HSA is the savings plan. The high deductible health insurance is what's hard to get.
Right.
Right.
But a reasonable one. I mean, you can get high deductible health insurance because everything is now.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And it turns out high deductible health insurance at least has people stop and ask, what do the things cost? The problem right now is the insurance itself, which should be a pittance.
Right.
It should be a pittance. Has been pushed up by all of the Obamacare regulations. And no, the government has ruined high deductible health insurance plans for pretty much everyone in America. It's one of the things that conservatives and libertarians keep pointing to liberals and saying, can we actually measure things by what happens rather than by what your good intentions mm-hmm. were? Mm-hmm. Can we remember this the next time we want to put something in place that running things through government regulations don't really work? Can we just allow choice? Because if somebody doesn't want to have all the bells and whistles on an insurance program, maybe they don't want to pay for those, and maybe that's okay. These are the kinds of things that libertarians and conservatives continually want, you know, liberals to ask. Is
but the answer to that is no, no, and no.
Right. Yeah. The liberals won't seem to actually admit that some of this stuff just doesn't work very well, and that government is not as nimble as the free markets are at bringing out products that people want to buy. Even the regulations that were in place before Obamacare were causing many issues and problems. Mm-hmm. I don't want to pay for the first aspirin through an insurance program. Right. I want to pay for after $5,000. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, on average, healthcare in this country is about 17% of gross domestic product. If you take your salary of, let's say, $100,000 and you say, hey, will my healthcare cost $17,000? If it costs anything less than $17,000, consider yourself fortunate. You're in good health. You're in better health than average, and just pay for it out of pocket. And, you know, cut that number in half, $8,500 for someone whose take-home pay is $50,000. If you want to pay out of pocket less than $18,500, you're doing better than average. Just consider yourself lucky. So, you know, those are the kinds of questions that people need to ask. At any rate, in retirement, it's very difficult to get insurance now, especially in the 60 to 65 range. Mm-hmm. So you might as well keep working if you've got any kind of healthcare coverage. And working just for your healthcare coverage is probably a good idea.
Let's go to the phones. I have about a minute left. Greg, thanks for hanging on. You're on with David Morata. Go right ahead.
Hey, David. You know, I really appreciate you saying, but, you know, a lot of people get to their late years, you know, and stuff happens, catastrophic things. But my thing is with the healthcare costs right now, insurance premiums and, you know, your local taxes, state taxes, you know, individuals in Albemarle County and Virginia, throughout Virginia, might make, you know, what some people would consider almost poverty, but, you know, they've been able to, over the years in the past, build a house, have a home, raise a family. But what's happened in the modern day is that there's so much eaten up by Obamacare, by taxes, by new things that they didn't have to deal with in the past. In my opinion, would be just get their debts paid down to zero, but they may not wind up with any retirement at all, but they would at least be out of debt. And I was like, you're opinion on that, and how do you deal with that in later years?
All right, we got 30 seconds for a big question.
Yeah, it turns out I do know a number of people this year who decided to just throw in the towel and quit working because they wanted to qualify for Obamacare and they couldn't any other way. So I do know a lot of people who've sort of gone John Galt and stopped working just to appear to be destitute for the government's sake, even if they're not. You know, it's difficult. If you head into retirement with very few assets, you really should work as long as possible, out of necessity, not out of just avocation, because living off of Social Security underperforms inflation, and so you get a 1% standard of living, at least a 1% pay cut every single year, and that's not really what you want to do. For most people, Social Security represents a third of their retirement income. Really, you want it to represent much less than that because it's not going to be that much money.
David Morata, we just scratched the surface. What a great topic. He's online at moratonmoney.com. And thank you so much for today.
Yeah, and again, if people want to go register for the Ollie class, Success and Significance in Retirement, they'll get 4.5 hours of being able to ask questions and hear me talk about retirement.